Monster Man, episode 226, Narwhal and Listener Mail. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode continues our journey through the Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Now next on the docket is the N chapter. After our long journey through M, we're finally ready to do N. But here's the thing, there's only two monsters in the N chapter. The Nereid and the Narwhal. And we've already done Nereids. We did them as a special episode. You can go back into the feed earlier and check those out. So don't really have anything to say about Nereids, and Narwhals are great, but they're not going to take me 10 minutes. So I thought that what I would do is first address the Narwhal and then answer some listener mail, which has been building up over these weeks that I've been away. So Narwhals are a species of whale found in Arctic waters. They're best known for having tusks, single long teeth that project from the left side of the jaw. Mostly it's males that have them. About 1 in 6 female narwhals has tusks. Well, a tusk. There are very rare cases of a female having two tusks. They're much more common in males. I believe we now think that the tusk is not just a weapon. It's not used to, like, fence or fight with other males, but actually it's a form of communication, that it's an organ that it's capable of detecting a lot about the composition and the currents of the water and things like that. And we know that they also sort of slap fish with them to stun them and make them easier to catch. They're not deadly weapons. I guess the really interesting thing about them is that narwhal tusks were sold to people unfamiliar with the creature as unicorn horns. We're really up into the modern era, so a lot of the time if you see something, you know, that's in some antiquary's collection that's believed to be a unicorn horn, could very well be a narwhal tusk. They do look a bit like you'd think a unicorn horn should look, but they're not horn, they're a tooth. Why the narwhal isn't under W for whale, I have no idea. Why it's singled out as being, you know, this monster that should be in the Monster Manual 2, I have no idea. Narwhals are not aggressive to humans or anything like that. That'd be weird. So with that out of the way, let's take a look at some listener mail that I've received. I got a lot of great comments about the special episode about the Monster Mash. Stan writes that the jolts are probably at the heart of the thing. That is to say, the jolts from the scientist's electrodes, which the ghouls want to receive, and suggest that maybe this is like opening up some part of their minds, or maybe even changing their minds, that this could explain why Dracula switches sides, you know, beginning upset that the Monster Mash has displaced the Transylvania Twist, and then eventually becoming part of it. And it's worth pointing out that this is a story that is all told from the perspective of the scientist, so there may be areas we haven't really understood, and Stan speculates, is this a palace coup? One commenter I always look forward to hearing from is Steve Dempsey, and Steve's got a couple of observations on several of the past episodes, so I'll just kind of combine these all together. He pointed out about the episode about minimals, and I can't believe I didn't think of this, but the minimals are basically Pokemon, right? You could go around collecting minimals from different places and, you know, taking them to places to train them, and, you know, they fight each other, and there's a pair of jewel thieves that you have to foil. Now, I mean, my excuse for this is that I've never played a Pokemon game. I'm exactly the wrong age for Pokemon and Power Rangers. Those are things that came out when I was at the age when you don't want to do stuff that you think is for kids. When you're a kid, you don't mind doing stuff that you think is for kids. And when you're an adult, you have the self-confidence to do stuff that you think is for kids. But when you're a teenager, you don't like doing stuff that you think is for kids. So when Pokemon came out, I was like, oh, this is for kids, and I never got involved in it. So it's not a reference that comes automatically to me, even though it sort of should be. Steve also raised the question, like, well, what if you free a golem, and thus it learns to speak, right? It becomes fully sentient. Since all you need to make a golem is the spell and the ability to do the spell, then, you know, could the golem create an army of golems to follow it? But I think you need rather more than that to make a golem. It's a whole collection of spells, including Animate Dead. So the golem would have to go and become a cleric and then focus on making an army of golems. I feel like it would stand out. Although, if we argue that it's based to some degree on the cleric who created it, then, you know, maybe. And finally, Steve suggested a good use for the Moondog, which is if you accept that the Moondog is devoted to destroying evil and maybe like doesn't have much of a sense of pragmatism, so maybe you are, you know, tasked with escorting a criminal to prison or something like that, and the Moondog thinks, no, I'm just going to destroy this guy. You wind up with one of those situations where, you know, the Punisher wants to kill some bad guy, but Spider-Man has to protect him or something like that. And there's something there. Yeah, I think that's actually a pretty good idea. Although Steve doesn't seem to share my view that most characters are chaotic good. So Chris McGurr wrote in about the Mongrel Men and wanted to let me know that in 5th edition, first they're Mongrel folk, because of course they don't have to be men. But secondly, that as they appear in the 5th edition version of Ravenloft, Curse of Strahd, they are exactly the creatures from the Island of Dr. Moreau. So the genetics part, which is the thing that I found the most difficult to deal with, got chucked out, but their patchwork appearance got maintained. And there are a couple of other creatures that we found that to be the case, that that certain aspects of them did not get kept in later editions, but something about them appealed to the designers of those. The Froghemoth is another example, I would think. Or someone looked at the Froghemoth and went, well, there's definitely something here, but it's not this stuff about flying saucers. Returning to the Golem episode, that, of course, was sponsored by Eric Vallone, who writes that as a parent playing Minecraft together with his child, he has begun protecting the villages with hordes of golems, which are simply made out of 3 blocks of iron and a jack-o'-lantern, to which I can only say, well, you'd better watch out for them getting ideas. The scarecrow, the animated scarecrow, is basically a type of golem, isn't it? But I think it goes into the category of undead, presumably because the idea is it's got bones in there or whatever. But I think more accurately because it's a Halloween monster. Golem's not a Halloween monster. It's hard to say what is and is not a Halloween monster as a rule, but it's very easy to look at a monster and decide whether it's a Halloween monster or not, right? This is Benito Cereno, the comic writer, blogger and podcast host, came up with this distinction, this idea that, you know, like Dracula is a Halloween monster, Godzilla is not. I think golems aren't Halloween monsters, but scarecrows are. But that's just an example of golem having come to mean something like artificial construct. So, you know, I once ran a game in which one of the characters was a person who had awoken, like he had no idea who he was, he had woken up on a morgue slab. He was sort of a Frankenstein-style construct, but created to embody the myth of the kind of dying and reborn god king or earth god. And one of the things that he actually investigated was this idea that he might be a golem. And, he went and talked to a rabbi about it and, you know, asked him a bunch of questions about the myth of the golem. And the rabbi was like, no, a golem's an artificial creature. You know, it was not ever a person. It's a story about being made new. I think that, you know, you're seeing the idea of a golem being based on like later media, which is basically to say that the gamers playing this game looked at a Frankenstein creature and went, oh, a flesh golem. But that's actually just a trope that comes from Dungeons and Dragons rather than from anywhere else. I mean, I think the term golem to mean, you know, essentially fantasy robot is a D&Dism. Of course, a robot is Czech as well, which is an interesting coincidence, right? Golem is from Prague. It's not a Czech language word, but you know what I mean. And there are even more listener comments that I haven't had time to include in today's episode, but hopefully, you know, now that I'm back, I should be able to reply to them all either on the Patreon site or via email or on Twitter or whatever. It means so much to me whenever any of you listening to this write in, and I really do appreciate hearing from you. Sometimes I'm away or can't answer or whatever, but I will usually try to do so eventually, even though I'm sure some fall through the cracks. But yeah, so that's the end of the N chapter of Monster Manual 2. I'm afraid there wasn't much to it, but hopefully we still got some good ideas out of the listener mail. In our next episode, we're going to be moving on to the Obliviax and the Oliphant on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.